upcoming stories on the KRFP Evening Report. There has been a suspect arrested in the death of a St. Mary's man, and a newly found mineral has been named in honor of a U of I professor. National headlines now from FSRN and Internet News Network.
Treasury Department today announced sanctions against leaders of the Syrian government, citing human rights abuses against anti-government protesters. President Obama signed an executive order freezing the assets of President Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian vice president and prime minister, as well as several other high-ranking government ministers.
The U.S. government's calling on the International Monetary Fund to name an interim managing director following last weekend's arrest of Dominique Strauss-Kahn on charges of attempted rape. U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner says Mr. Strauss-Kahn is not in a position to run the IMF. Our Washington correspondent Simon Marks reports that lawyers representing the hotel maid who claims she was attacked by Mr. Strauss-Kahn insist the legal process will prove the allegations are true.
A lawyer representing the 31-year-old maid said that she hasn't been able to return to work since the attack. He called her a very proper, dignified young woman, dismissing any suggestion that she agreed to have sex with the IMF managing director. U.S. newspapers report that Mr. Strauss-Kahn's defense will be based on the notion that his sexual encounter with the woman was consensual, after it emerged that there is forensic evidence to prove some kind of sexual contact. The move by the U.S. Treasury Secretary came after the IMF confirmed that it has not had any contact with Dominique Strauss-Kahn since his arrest last weekend. But a spokesman for the fund said that obviously it needed to be in contact with him in due course.
Mexican police Tuesday discovered 513 migrants crammed inside two trailers bound for the U.S. 410 were from Guatemala, but people from as far as Japan and India were also in the trailers. The migrants, among them 32 women and four children, said they'd agreed to pay $7,000 to be taken to the U.S. Police spotted them using X-ray equipment.
A United States envoy is meeting with government officials in Myanmar today, the first high-level diplomatic contact since the new civilian government took over. The U.S. has deemed the recent elections seriously flawed. The same officials are in power, just under different titles. But State Department spokesperson Mark Toner defended the visit.
Which is consistent with our two-track approach to Burma. There's nothing Pollyannish about this. You know, we recognize that there's some fairly serious challenges to address in this relationship, but we're going to continue to pursue a dual-track policy that involves pressure but also principled engagement.
The U.S. has been pressuring Myanmar, also known as Burma, to release political prisoners. This week, the junta government began releasing more than 15,000 prisoners under an announced amnesty. The government also said it would rescind death penalties in favor of life sentences and reduce other sentences by a year. But human rights groups say the release does not go far enough. The BBC reports about 30 political prisoners are among those released. Amnesty International says there are currently 2,200 prisoners of conscience in custody, something the government has denied. Human rights groups are also concerned about Myanmar's most famous political prisoner, Aung San Suu Kyi. She recorded and sent a video to the Australian government asking them to keep up international pressure.
We have not seen any positive, definite move towards a truly democratic process.
Audio from Australia's ABC. U.S. Envoy Joseph Yun is expected to meet with Suu Kyi tomorrow during his diplomatic visit to Myanmar.
Russian President Dmitry Medvedev held his first press conference since taking the post 3 years ago. He refused to say whether he will seek re-election, but said his intentions would be known soon. Anya Daevi reports from Moscow.
Both Russian President Dmitry Medvedev and his predecessor, mentor and now Prime Minister Vladimir Putin, are eligible to stand again in 2012. When asked about re-election, Mr. Medvedev said that political life is not show business. It's quite a complex job that is subject to certain processes which must be respected. A decision like this has to be taken when the time is right, he said. Answering a question about his relationship with Prime Minister Vladimir Putin, Dmitry Medvedev said he had known known Mr. Putin for more than 20 years, and they were truly like-minded. This does not mean, however, that we see eye to eye on everything, he added. But we're close in our strategies, otherwise we would simply be unable to work together.
More than 1,000 people protested in northern Afghanistan today after a NATO raid led to the deaths of 4 people, claimed by local officials to be civilians. The demonstrations, which centered on a NATO military post, turned violent. At least 12 people died. Media reports say security forces and police fired live shots to disperse the crowd as it closed in on the base. It's still unclear exactly how the protesters were killed. NATO officials maintain that the 4 killed in the overnight raid were insurgents. Mexican police have discovered more than 500 undocumented migrants in 2 cargo trucks in the southern state of Chiapas. Officials say conditions in the trucks were cramped and the migrants suffered from lack of air and water. FSRN's Shannon Young has more.
The 513 migrants found crammed into the trailers of 2 18-wheelers Tuesday came from Central and South America, the Caribbean, and Asia. State police discovered the migrants via an X-ray machine at a checkpoint near the state capital of Chiapas. According to statements made to police, each migrant was to pay $7,000 upon arrival in the United States. State police turned over the migrants to immigration authorities, who are processing deportation orders. Thousands of undocumented migrants enter Mexico every week in an attempt to reach the United States, often traveling in dangerous and denigrating conditions. Allegations of corrupt officials are common along the migrant trail. In recent years, organized criminals have muscled into migration routes, setting up smuggling rings, kidnapping for ransom, and trafficking victims into prostitution and forced labor. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca.
Economic development for Jordan was one of the issues on the table for talks between US President Barack Obama and King Abdullah. The broader issues of the Middle East are also taking center stage in Washington in a series of meetings and speeches. Our Washington correspondent Priscilla Huff has more.
Jordan's King Abdullah traveled to Washington to discuss his own citizens' demands for a better life. U.S. President Barack Obama offered to solve those problems with about $1 billion U.S. in economic development. The rapid political transformation of Egypt and Tunisia were also under discussion. And then the two leaders turned their attention to the question of the Israelis and the Palestinians. The king promised to be a strong partner in the issues in which President Obama said they both have an enormous stake in.
It's more vital than ever that both Israelis and Palestinians find a way to get back to the table and begin negotiating.
Priscilla Huff, Washington.
The cost of caring for the elderly could treble by 2050, according to a report by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The body, which represents the most industrialized nations, estimates 10% of people in OECD countries will be more than 80 years old by 2050.
An Al Jazeera reporter has been released after being taken into custody in Syria 3 weeks ago. Dorothy Parvaz was transferred from Syria to Iran and questioned there, her fiancé told media. She arrived in Qatar this morning.
The Obama administration will begin to tap federal retiree programs to help fund operations after the government lost its ability Monday to borrow more money from the public. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has long warned the government would soon hit the $14.3 trillion debt ceiling, the legal limit on how much it can borrow. With that limit reached Monday, Geithner is undertaking special measures to postpone the day when he will no longer have enough funds to pay the government's bills. Geithner will begin to borrow from retirement funds for federal workers. If Congress does not vote by August 2nd to raise the debt limit, Geithner says the government is likely to default on some of its obligations, including writing Social Security checks.
A federal judge has stepped in and blocked a recent settlement between the Interior Department and Wild Earth Guardians aimed at streamlining Endangered Species Act determinations. The goal of the settlement was to move candidate species forward in the review process, but the Center for Biological Diversity opposed the settlement as being, quote, too weak, too vague, and ultimately unenforceable. U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan stayed the agreement until mid-June and told the parties to go back to mediation, including the Center for Biological Diversity, in the talks. I'm Jess Burns.
Ollie Barrett.
INN World Report. are listening to the KRFP Evening Report. I'm Susan Austin in the KRFP studios with Mary McHugh. Taking a very quick look at the weather, it is sunny and 64 degrees now. However, there is a chance of some isolated thunderstorms tonight, and there is an advisory that there may be some flash flooding and some concern with some of the high water in the rivers. So if people would like to just kind of take a look out their window before they assume that the rivers are good, that would probably be a wise thing. And now we're going to go to the evening report.
The Moscow Pullman Daily News is reporting that two counterfeit bills, a 5 and 20, were reported at separate Pullman businesses earlier today. Both of the counterfeit bills were missing anti-counterfeit features used by the Treasury, including security stripes and watermarks. Pullman Police Department Detective Bill Orsburn said the $5 bill also had smudged ink and the $20 bill had a yellow tint, causing it to stand out against other bills. Orsburn said businesses should notify cashiers and pay close attention to bills they receive in the next few days. The Pullman Police Department is asking local businesses to check bills carefully, and if a bill is thought to be counterfeit, the business should hold on to it and call PPD Dispatch at 509-332-2521. He said if the bill is obtained from a legitimate source, the customer will probably stick around to talk with police, and any information they could provide about where they received the bill could be helpful.
An orange-yellow mineral found in the Sunday uranium mine near San Miguel, Colorado, has been named gunterite to honor University of Idaho professor and chair of the Department of Geological Sciences, Mickey Gunter. Gunter, who has been at UI for 22 years, told the Daily News that about 20 new minerals are discovered each year, and many more are likely to be found on the moon and on Mars. Gunter's specialty is optical mineralogy, which is the study of how light interacts with minerals. His research has been used to remove radioactivity from water at the damaged Fukushima Daiichi nuclear reactor in Japan. His current research focuses on the effects of mineral dust on the human body.
In order to save money, Pullman City Council members have decided not to collaborate with the county while it redraws city voting districts based on 2010 census data, even though one of the city's three wards has only one active voter. Whitman County has offered to help combine their redistricting process with the city to save funds, but council member Keith Bloom told the Daily News the city's goal is to redistrict, quote, without spending a dime doing it. Instead, the city is going to use an analysis done by hand to modify the boundary of city voting districts or wards. The city of Pullman and Whitman County use different processes for drawing districts. The county draws its districts, which they call precincts, based on voter registration, while the city draws their lines according to population. City ward populations range from 9,856 to 10,344 in population. City planner Pete Dickinson said that when the lines are redrawn to change the boundaries by a few blocks, the numbers don't change much. One of the city wards, which contains 9,000 people, only houses a single active voter, which is defined as someone who has voted in recent election. Whitman County is considering collaborating with the Division of Governmental Studies and Services at Washington State University to analyze its precinct boundaries and wanted to combine their redistricting process with the city's, sharing the $18,000 price tag. A 2003 state mandate required Washington cities to pay for voter registration maintenance. City Council members agreed that the $27,000 spent on voter registration in 2009 is enough money spent already for voting purposes.
Idaho State Police have made an arrest in the death of 43-year-old Robert Dean Merrick at his home 7 miles south of St. Mary's on Monday. Benamaw County Prosecutor Douglas Payne announced today that Merrick's niece, 26-year-old Melissa Renee Bates of Bayview, had been arrested in connection with the death. The search for Merrick began when he did not show up for a swing shift at Stimson Lumber on Monday, and co-workers became concerned and notified authorities. Merrick's body was found a few hours later. Officials have not discussed a possible motive, but Bates has a history of two domestic violence arrests. In a 2009 case, Bates pled guilty to disturbing the peace and served only one day in jail and had to complete a 60-hour life skills class. In a 2007 case, a jury acquitted Bates of domestic battery but convicted her on the lesser charge of trespassing, for which she served 4 days in jail and had 1 year of unsupervised probation.
CareNet of the Palouse celebrated the grand opening of a 6,000-square-foot facility for expanded medical care and counseling at 1515 West A Street last night, May 17th. CareNet CEO Brenda Salzer said the facility is designed to serve both university communities and underserved populations in Whitman and Latah counties. The organization is described on its website as a nonprofit Christian ministry providing assistance for those facing pregnancy, sexuality, and abortion-related issues. Salzer said the organization aims to serve women she called, quote, exploited, who think their only alternative to an unwanted pregnancy is abortion. The center offers adoption referrals and abstinence-based relationship education for men and women.
31-year-old Levi Wayne Mendenhall, formerly of Kamai, pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court on bomb charges related to an explosive device he left on the hood of his estranged wife's car. Mendenhall admitted in his plea that in August and September of 2009, he purchased components in stores in northeastern Washington for a device made of 3-inch plastic pipe and stuffed with explosive powder, razor blades, and BBs, which were wired to a battery. The owner of the Kamai home, where Mendenhall's wife was staying, discovered the box on the hood of the wife's car and contacted the marshal when she saw the wires. The device was removed and disabled by the Spokane bomb squad. In the plea agreement, Mendenhall pleaded guilty to transporting explosives with the intent to kill, injure, or intimidate, stalking, and use of explosive materials during the commission of a federal felony.
An outbreak of a deadly strain of equine herpes has closed the doors of Washington State University Veterinarian Teaching Hospital to horses and camelids for all but emergency cases for at least 2 weeks. A single horse at the facility tested positive for the virus, which can be spread by contact between horses or by humans or equipment that pass the virus from one animal to another. The sick horse has been sent home. The virus, known as EHV1, does not pose a risk to humans, but many horses develop neurological disease or die from the infection. It is believed that infected horses can pass the disease to alpacas and llamas. The outbreak, which has affected 17 western states, is believed to have begun at a cutting competition in Utah, where 3 of the 500 horses in attendance have already died. 2 of the dead horses were from Idaho, and 6 of the 18 horses at the event have been infected. WSU College of Veterinary Medicine spokesperson Charlie Powell said that taking aggressive measures to quarantine the outbreak can make it relatively short, but warns that mingling horses or transporting them unnecessarily can turn the outbreak into a serious and long-term epidemic. The first symptom of the disease is fever, which may be accompanied by coughing, sneezing, partial paralysis, and balance issues.
A Montana farming family is appealing a decision over the way Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana has priced their group insurance policy, and Montana's insurance commissioner, the U.S. Secretary of Labor, and the National Association of Insurance Commissioners have all filed Friends of the Court briefs on their behalf.
The Fossen family, who farms near Joplin, purchased group insurance through the Montana Chamber of Commerce, which markets health insurance through an association for its member businesses. In group insurance policies, all members of the group receive the same rates based on the health cost for everyone in the group. Yet Blue Cross, which underwrites most of the policies, has been pricing each policy in the chamber group separately rather than treating the association as a single group. This practice, which caused the Fossen's health insurance rates to rise 21% in a single year because of health costs incurred by the family, is illegal in Montana but allowed by federal law. In a lawsuit filed in 2009, Judge Charles Lovell of Helena dismissed the Fossen's complaint, saying federal law supersedes state law on group health plans. An appeal before the Ninth Circuit Court is asking judges to overturn Lovell's ruling and put the case back into state court.
Yesterday, Tuesday, May 17th, Latah County voters in Troy, Potlatch, Kendrick, and White Pine passed supplemental maintenance and operation levies. In a separate election, voters elected Michael C. Mike Brown as Library District Trustee.
A Kootenai land use dispute has forced the cancellation of poultry classes on a small farm south of the I-90 near the Washington-Idaho state line. Beth and Dave Tisdale paid $1.2 million for the 80-acre Cable Creek farm, where they raise some cattle, pigs, chickens, and vegetables. They had intended to offset part of the cost by hosting events like wedding and family reunions, holding classes, and operating a bed and breakfast, and received a conditional use permit from the county to do so. Neighbors contested the permit in court, while the Tisdales made improvements to prepare for the new activities. They received a conditional use permit in the commercial resort category, and the neighbors went back to court. When the Tisdales allowed friends to get married on their property, neighbors massed at the property lines, shooting off guns and gunning tractors to disrupt the ceremony. Then the neighbors won their appeal to strike down the commercial resort conditional use permit. Now the Tisdales are in the process of trying to secure a permit to host farm-related activities and classes, but the neighbors are still saying no. When the Tisdales advertised a poultry raising class for 10 people, they were informed that they didn't have the proper permit to host it, which forced the class to be canceled.
Lewiston police ticketed a man and a woman who allegedly stole a donation jar from the Rose Hours grocery store on Thane Road, which had been placed there to raise money for Latah County Detention Deputy Michael Lemires and his family. Lemires died 2 weeks ago after a long battle with cancer. 30-year-old Michelle K. Riddle and 44-year-old Chad L. Gureth were identified from surveillance cameras. Riddle has pleaded innocent of the charge.
The city of Moscow has permitted 43 green buildings under its green building program since the program began in 2006. That's the word from city plumbing and mechanical inspector Justin Goodwin, who gave a presentation on the program at Monday night's Moscow City Council meeting. Goodwin said the goals of green building certification program is to improve the indoor environment by using natural, non-toxic construction, reduce the environmental impact by using less building materials, reduce energy consumption with using energy-saving methods and renewable energy resources, minimize disturbances to the building site, and reduce water consumption.
Buildings represent 70% of the total U.S. electricity consumption. That is to date. Buildings also consume 40% of the total energy used today. And buildings are responsible 40% of the total greenhouse gas emissions. This is awfully high. And if we go with green building, we can lower those numbers. Some of the numbers can get lowered 25% in just electricity. We can get 30% energy using a green home. Our indoor quality, homeowners spend 90% of their time indoors now. It's not like the old days where you went outside and played. We got Nintendo and TV. Indoor pollutant levels are 2 to 5 times higher than outdoors.
And EPA has ranked indoor air quality as the top five health risk in the United States. Asthma is number one coming from indoor air quality.
That was Moscow Plumbing and Mechanical Inspector Justin Goodwin at Monday night's Moscow City Council meeting. Goodwin said those who apply for green certification will have their plan review fast-tracked by the city building staff. Green-certified buildings get a green building medallion. Goodwin outlined the different levels of green certification and said builders can get a silver certification by just changing little things.
They can change their framing techniques. They can reuse materials and recycle. They can change the layout of the house using natural light and ventilation and shorten your hot water runs. And then water plumbing fixtures through a manifold system. And if they want to even go one step higher, which is the gold or even the highest level emerald, it takes a little more planning. You want to, you know, they use more of an infill lot or minimal disturbance lot. Use lumber from a sustainable forest. Use heat recovery units. Low water use fixtures and energy efficient products. And these are just examples. There's several combinations of stuff to meet the green building.
That was Moscow Plumbing and Mechanical Inspector Justin Goodwin at Monday night's Moscow City Council meeting, giving a report on the city's green building program.
A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that Richard Leavitt deserves to die for the brutal 1984 murder of Danette Jean Elg of Blackfoot. Leavitt stabbed Elg 15 times in her bedroom and then eviscerated her. He was originally sentenced to death in 1985 by former District Judge H. Reynolds George, who ruled the heinous nature of the crime offset any concerns about Leavitt's mental health as a mitigating factor in his sentencing. In 2007, U.S. Judge B. Lynn Windmill overturned the death penalty, concluding Leavitt's defense attorney, David Parmenter, failed to properly present information from a later MRI, which showed Leavitt had brain damage in the area responsible for impulse control. Chief Judge Alex Kozinski, writing for the majority of the panel that sent Leavitt back to death row, said Leavitt's attorney did not show that Parmenter's decision was unreasonable when he decided not to use Leavitt's personality and mental disorders to argue against the death penalty. Boise attorney David Niven has 14 days to request a review before a full panel of Ninth Circuit judges.
Washington state senators have approved a plan allowing cigar and pipe smoking at limited number of establishments in the state. The measure narrowly passed yesterday and was sent on to the House. The plan would permit up to 100 cigar lounges and 500 retail tobacco shops to allow smoking of pipes and cigars. However, cigarettes would still be banned. To obtain cigar lounge endorsements and tobacco store endorsements, businesses would pay annual fees of $17,500 and $6,000, respectively. Opponents say the bill violates the 2005 strict smoking ban, while supporters say it would allow some confined smoking for adults to enjoy in a social setting.
A wind power advocacy group is accusing the Bonneville Power Administration of conflict of interest in its decision to curtail use of wind power while there is a surplus of water behind hydroelectric dams, a move that will cost Northwest wind developers millions of dollars in tax credits. Wind energy operators want to be compensated for standing down, but that is a cost BPA would not like to pass on to ratepayers. The BPA handles about three-quarters of the region's electrical transmission and also sells power from Columbia Basin dams to power districts. The American Wind Energy Association is alleging the BPA is using its authority over transmission lines to promote its own business interest in hydropower. BPA spokesperson Michael Milstein defended the power management decision, noting that the BPA has also taken its big nuclear power plant offline and reduced operation of fossil fuel-powered plants. He also said the BPA has complied with regulations that grew out of the electrical deregulatory scandals in the 1990s, which require its energy production and regulatory functions be housed in different facilities, and limits contact between decision makers in the two branches of its operation. American Wind Energy Association Vice President Bob Gremlich said in a statement, BPA's policy, quote, is a classic case of anti-competitive and discriminatory behavior by a utility with a conflict of interest.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report. I'm Susan Austin with Mary McHugh in the KRFP Newsroom. Stay tuned for Building Bridges coming up now.